Thanks for spending time with us on The Green this week. I'm Tom Byrne. The 2019 Academy Awards will be handed out later this month. The Oscars are an annual reminder of just how big a part movies play in our nation's cultural life. But the way we experience movies today is far different than it used to be, a fact driven home by a new book entitled Historic Movie Theaters of Delaware. Its author, Michael Nazarevich, digs deep into the history of the places we've watched films in the First State and chronicles the changes they've gone through over the years. Nazarevich spent 20 months researching and writing this book, and in this week's Enlighten Me, he joins us to discuss it. Let's start at the beginning, which is what you do in your book. You start by identifying the first movie theater in the First State, and I guess it could come as a surprise to people exactly where it was. What did you conclude?
What I wanted to do, Tom, was not just determine the first movie shown in the state, but since films were introduced to theaters that already existed, I wanted to go back and find the oldest theater I could in the state. Researched historical text and came to the determination that what's now known today as the Everett Theater in Middletown began as the Middletown Opera House in 1868. There may have been other buildings that were built prior to 1868. A good example is the Queen in Wilmington. But the Queen was built as a hotel, not as a theater, and then later became a movie house, whereas the Middletown Opera House was built as an opera house along with the town hall, and it eventually went on to show movies.
Yeah, I guess a lot of people would have maybe made the assumption that Wilmington would be the place where you would find that first theater, but it turns out it's Middletown.
I was surprised as well. Like many, as you say, I was expecting something in Wilmington too, considering it ultimately became really kind of the most densely populated part of the state to have theaters.
I was going to say, theaters grew pretty rapidly here and around the country, particularly obviously in the early part of the 20th century. And the one thing I was kind of struck by just kind of going through this book was just how many they were for a small state over the years. Were you surprised at just kind of the number of movie theaters that Delaware housed at one time or another?
I really was. That was one of the big surprises for me. I must confess, my initial idea was to focus on New Castle County. And maybe some bias coming out there, but thinking with Wilmington and how densely populated it is that there would be the majority of theaters there. But as I continued to research, I was really surprised at how many theaters were all over the state and really pleasantly surprised that there were so many small towns that had their own theaters, that had their own hubs of entertainment and centers where the community could gather, that I never would have guessed 150 when I started my research, but was very pleased to land at that number.
And it's funny, what you just mentioned was another thing that jumped out at me and probably something that younger people are not aware of in this era of the multiplex, just how significant a part of the community movie theaters were for so many years. They were really significant places in towns, weren't they?
They were. They were so often the main sort of gathering point for towns, for political rallies, for community meetings. Oftentimes, school commencement exercises were held in these places when they weren't being used for entertainment purposes. So the community went really and repurposed these theaters as they needed to. That still goes on today. Here and there, there are still theaters that are used for community purposes, but nothing like it was back 100 years ago, 150 years ago.
As you look back in your research, was there a for lack of a better term, heyday or a golden age for movie theaters in Delaware?
So there was. So, it sort of peaked in 1921, where based on my research, there were about 59 theaters that were open around the state at that time. When you consider that today there are about 20 theaters open at this point in time, or 22 rather, that have shown films in the past or presently show films today. So that was sort of the peak number. So you're dealing with a lot of opera houses and movie theaters happening at the same time, and you're still dealing with vaudeville entertainment. So there was this great sort of transition where all of these types of entertainment were happening around the same time. So you have all of these places to put all of these things on. And then, of course, when you move into the 30s and the 40s, you sort of get into the golden era of Hollywood. And you sort of see these larger movie palaces start to open around the state to sort of reflect the entertainment of the time.
And I also found it really interesting, going through this book, that it was interesting how societal issues like indecency, race relations, played out with movie theaters. And in a lot of ways, the movie theaters and how they dealt with those issues kind of reflected the times and the debates of their eras, didn't they?
They did. And topics like those were a big reason why I chose the structure of the book that I did, rather than just have a collection of, like a list of movie theaters and to give each theater's history as its own entry. I really wanted to show the evolution of theaters and the evolution of theater going over this 150-year period. So, like you say, decency, there were the blue laws in the early half of the century, and then when you get into sort of the adult entertainment licenses in the 70s and 80s and all of the drama that sort of surrounded that, plus segregation and integration and so forth, when you think about what we just talked about how theaters were sort of the central point of the community, and then when you look at these larger societal issues, once you kind of go through that entire 150 years, it all sort of fits together, that oftentimes theaters reflect what's happening in the community and in society at the time.
I also found interesting, you had a lot of really cool anecdotes in this book, like some of the big movie names that at one time or another kind of came to Delaware for one reason or another. Can you share a couple of the anecdotes that you thought were kind of like really interesting when, Hollywood, for lack of a better term, came to Delaware?
One of the stories that I found early that really sort of drove me to look deeper into this was the Clint Eastwood story. So in 1977, Clint Eastwood wanted to have his film The Gauntlet screened in advance of its major release to see how an audience would react to it. The Branmar Cinema in North Wilmington was chosen for this experiment. I could never find a formal reason, but one of the theories that was posited in the papers then was that Delaware was close to Eastwood's home, which at the time was in Connecticut, and he didn't want to go to a city like New York where he would be easily identified. So I have to assume that Philadelphia was scratched off the list for that reason as well. So he winds up in North Wilmington at the Branmar. He's there in disguise, and he's going to sit through a screening of his film with your average Delaware audience. But because the advertising of the event wasn't handled quite as well as it could have been, very few people showed up. So Eastwood left, and his co-star and I believe his partner at the time, Sandra Locke, she stayed and watched the film with the handful of people that were there to see it. So I thought that was a really, really great story about a theater that I went to when I was a kid and never really had heard about or knew about. It was reported in the paper and kind of came and went, that I thought would be a great story to tell today, considering what Eastwood went on to become and has become today, this superstar and this director and the sort of Hollywood icon. And here he was in Delaware in 1977 trying to show a sneak preview of his film.
And the fact that it didn't work out is the thing that makes it even funnier is that it just kind of, as a plan, it flopped.
Yes, absolutely. And what's so great is I recently spoke to someone whose father worked that night at that theater and sort of confirmed that. So not that I doubted it, because it was seemed properly reported. But as the book starts to make its way on social media and people start to learn about it, I'm starting to hear stories like this. So to hear that Clint Eastwood connection of someone who was there that night was really, really neat.
Fascinating. And you also know that Delaware was one of the first places to screen Star Wars. Tell us a little bit about that.
Another great anecdote, and one that's very personal to me, as I saw Star Wars at the Tri-State Mall Theater in Claymont in 1977. I don't know that I was there opening weekend, but I do remember standing in a very long line to get tickets in the pre-Fandango era, when you had to get there and wait in line for tickets. Star Wars today is this cultural, multi-generational phenomenon, and sort of everyone knows about it in one degree or another. In 1977, while it was certainly exciting and had a lot of buzz about it, it was still sort of this singular thing. It was film. There were toys and T-shirts and that sort of stuff that came with it, but it's nothing like it is today. So having discovered that Star Wars was one, the Tri-State Mall Theater was one of 45 theaters to screen Star Wars when it originally opened, was really, really neat that a Delaware theater was sort of on the ground floor of that. Tri-State was the only theater in Delaware to screen it for a full month, which when you think about how films are screened today and how every theater seems to have four or five theaters with the same film running at the same time, it's interesting to see that a film of that consequence was being shown in one theater in the state for a full month before other theaters had their crack at it.
Which kind of brings me to my next question, which is, like, things are so much different now, and, particularly in this, you know, this era of multiplexes. How much do you feel like we've lost in this transition from the community theater, the small theater, to, you know, these mega theaters, as you said, that are oftentimes running the same movie on multiple screens throughout the day?
When you look at a place like Market Street in Wilmington in its heyday, and you've got maybe an 8-block length of Market Street that's got 8, 9, 10 theaters on it at the same time, and you look at a multiplex today, which has 12, 14 screens, we'll say, you know, 17, let's say, in People's Plaza, just to point to the biggest one in the state. There's an advantage to having a lot of choices in the same place, as well as a lot of choices with a very big parking lot where it's going to be easy to get to and to sort of that's centralized. But you do lose variety. And some of that variety is lost because these theaters need to stay in business, and this is the model. And if running a Marvel film on half of their screens will help keep them in business, that's okay. And I say that as a fan of Marvel films, but you do sort of, you lose that variety that these 7 or 8 theaters or 10 theaters along Market Street would have 7, 8, 10 different movies, and you do sort of lose that a bit.
You also note, though, at the end of this of the book, that there are some of these older theaters that are coming back in one form or another. How encouraging is that some of this history is being, in one way or another, preserved?
It is. It's very encouraging. I was really encouraged to see that the Ball Theater in Millsboro is going to make a comeback. So this was a theater with a great history. It was owned by a former baseball player by the name of Huck Betts. He was a pitcher. He played in Philly. And when he retired, he opened this theater. And it eventually closed in the 70s. And a couple of folks in Millsboro are looking to reopen it as a live theater as well as show movies based on reports. So that's encouraging that a small town like Millsboro will have its own theater, that there won't be a lot of drive time for folks. You know, as I've driven around the state and I've spoken to people downstate, one of the great challenges that folks downstate have is a lack of choice. For some, it's Rehoboth, or it's the Clayton and Dagsboro, or it's Dover, which covers a pretty big stretch of drive.
Yeah.
So the more that these smaller towns can get more theaters, even if it's just to see a movie once a week, it's better for the community.
And looking back through your research, is there a favorite theater or two that you have, or maybe one or two that have the best story?
Wow. So I would say that for me, probably the Warner Theater is high on that list, because it really, you know, it opened in 39. It ran until the mid-70s. It was sort of the crown jewel of all the Warner-owned theaters in the city. So when Hollywood came to Wilmington in that era, it typically came through the Warner. So it had a lot of that old Hollywood glamour to it. Its manager, Lewis Black, was an amazing, not only manager, but a community leader as well. And I do get into a bit of his biography in the back of the book, where in the back I try to call out specific people or families or organizations that I think played a significant part in the history of movie theaters. And I do speak about Lou Black specifically. So I really like the Warner as one of those sort of most historically significant theaters. I would put the Everett on there as well, because it does date back to the first one, and it survived 2 fires and a couple of financial-related closures and a ceiling collapse, and it was in Dead Poets Society. So there's a lot of great history at the Everett as well. So those would probably be my top two.
Thanks to Michael Nazarevich, author of Historic Movie Theaters of Delaware, for enlightening us this week. The book is slated for release February 18th. You can pre-order it now at Amazon.com. And when it's out, it will be available at Barnes & Noble and other smaller bookstores locally. And that's a wrap on this week's edition of The Green. The stories and interviews you've heard are online right now at DelawarePublic.org. Just head to The Green's page on our website. And remember, you can also check out The Green via podcast at our website, on iTunes, and on the NPR One app. We'd also like to hear from you. Give us your feedback and story ideas on our Facebook page, on Twitter at TheGreenDE, or by emailing us at TheGreen@DelawarePublic.org. Thanks to all those who helped make today's show possible, Delaware Public Media's Sarah Muir, Sophia Schmidt, and Kelly Steele. For all of them and the rest of the staff here at Delaware Public Media, I'm Tom Byrne saying thanks for joining us, and we'll see you again next week on The Green, where Delaware explores its common ground.